Welcome back, everyone, to The Language of Behavior. My name is Joshua Stamper, and I have the warm and sunny Charlie Peck, as we just got back from sunny Florida, and it was great to see you.
You too. What a great experience. Oh my gosh.
So last time, Charlie, we had talked briefly about a administrator that reached out in regards to some of the things that were going on their campus. And we didn't really share too much about that, but I really would like to use their question this week and kind of hone in on that a little bit more. So if you're ready, I'll put out the question here and then we'll dissect it. So the question was that they are seeing an increase in referrals on their campus. And the question is, how do I help the teachers to shift their mindset? Because what it seems like is that they're going right to the referral process pretty quickly.
Okay. My first thought is, what story are these teachers telling themselves about these students? What's the story spiral? That's how I would word it. And there's also some things I would question. What do they know about the nervous system and stress? What do they know about trauma and stress? And how are these behaviors showing up regularly in their classrooms? Like, what point are they at with these behaviors? At what point are they sending these kids to the office? At what point are they trying to intervene or prevent when they see them start to dysregulate? Do they even know what dysregulation looks like, sounds like, feels like? And so I want them to think about how they're looking in front of the student. Are they looking regulated? Are they looking calm? Because I would think about, well, what setting is this in and what's happening? Like, what's going on here? So if it's about the mindset of the teacher, it's about, what do they already know? What are they already equipped with? So these are questions I kind of had. So what kind of questions would you have and what would you be thinking?
Yeah, I think this happens a lot with not only with our staff when I was an administrator, but then also like the work that we do, Charlie, is that a lot of times there is a lack of understanding or knowledge with that. They just equate the behavior equals something that typically is a misconception. It's not really what's going on. And then we start to, you know, dive into biases and then labeling students and, you know, kind of what the goal is. And I think when you have a scenario-based system too, of like, when you see this, what does that look like to you? Like, what is your mindset as far as what is the need of the student? What are they trying to communicate? And you start to break it down and reflect on what's going on in that child's life. And then on top of that, I can think of 1,000 times where I would be like, well, we uncovered this, and then we'd share what's going on in that child's life, typically outside of school, sometimes in school. And then a light bulb moment of, oh, the behavior isn't really about me as a teacher, because sometimes they feel like, you know, it's personal. They're doing it to me. It's something about the relationship, or that this child doesn't like me, or that the child doesn't like the subject. They don't want to be in my class, right? Fill in the blank as to what that unknown is. And then once they figure out that, oh, behind the scenes, there's something much greater going on that's contributing to the behavior. That's, I think, when the mind shift starts to happen. I know as a campus administrator, we actually created a video where we made it anonymous with the students, but we just had kids talking and they shared their stories. And it was heartbreaking. It was like 20 different kids, just their voice talking about what's going on at home. And not to give too many details, and we didn't give names, and we want to make it anonymous. But by the end of that meeting, we literally had teachers crying. That wasn't what we were trying to do, but that was just them understanding, oh my goodness, these kids that are coming into our building have just this monster amount of needs on their shoulders every day. And it's no wonder that we're seeing what we're seeing in the classroom. And also just the understanding that school is not the top priority. A lot of these kids are just trying to survive in a powerless situation.
And that's why their brain is in survival mode. So they're showing up to our schools and our classrooms and our buildings and our buses in survival mode. And so their nervous system is elevated already. That's the mindset shift that we need to make, is what are they coming in with and why are they coming in like that? So what you explain there is humanizing our kids. We humanize them by telling their story, but getting it right, making sure, and we may not always have the details, but we can always guess that there is something pretty big going on in their life, either now or in the past, that's resurfaced for some reason. Sometimes an anniversary is coming up of something that happens so frequently. That's when I get more kids into my office to see me in therapy, because it was the anniversary of their parents passing or something like that. We just need to ask ourselves the question so that we can shift our mindset around it to become more compassionate towards their situation. So when we humanize them, that's when the mindset does shift. So yeah, that's great. But we also have to get some training around that. Sometimes we just don't know what to think. That's why training's important. That's why I love when we do our cohort, Josh. That's what's so powerful. So not only do we give them the training, then it's an opportunity to start talking about these scenarios. And then they start thinking about their own kids and their own students. And by the way, when we work with leaders, then they start thinking about their staff and they humanize their staff. So there's just so much to it, but we do need to coach them through it because just giving them information isn't always necessarily the best way to shift their minds.
I mean, every campus, every district has like a discipline matrix. And we also had to look through that too and dissect it as a staff to say like, what are the behaviors that you feel are behaviors that require a referral for a student to be removed from the educational environment? And also getting common language through everybody to understand what that looks like and what are the things that have happened prior to that are interventions, and maybe it's a tier one intervention through MTSS prior to referring and elevating it to someone else taking it on. And obviously there's a whole system constructed based on resources and people on your campus as to who's going to be dealing with behavior. But we were seeing literally thousands and thousands of minutes on really, really small minor behaviors that were being escalated quickly. And so just kind of letting them know like, no, on this campus, these are the things that need to be interventions that are put in place prior to it being elevated. Because if it's a disruption in the classroom or a sign of disrespect, like there are things that we can put in place. And like you were saying, then that requires training to make sure that every staff member on our campus had training to deal with that in the moment. And if it got to a higher level, well, that's when it's time to call for maybe a push in, or maybe it's time for a referral to be sent in. But I think too often teacher gets frustrated in the situation in the moment. And that's when they maybe escalate something that really is a low level infraction that doesn't need to be escalated.
Yeah, I think they panic. I think teachers panic because they just don't know what to do. And when we don't know what to do, we either do nothing or we try to do the same thing that we were doing before that wasn't working, but we don't have any tools. We don't have the strategies. We don't have the information, the basic information about stress and how it shows up, manifests, especially when they're elevated already. So I think there's so much we can do in education. I really do believe we can equip teachers so much better, paras, support staff, office staff, so that those office referrals are completely reduced. I know you have data that supports that. You've done it yourself. So I think we can do this. I know we can do this. I'm excited about the cohort model because that is the model that we're going to do. So we're going to teach the basic skills that not only helps us respond more effectively to student needs and decode their behavior and then respond more effectively before it gets so big, but we're looking at our needs first. We're looking at ourselves and how we can stay regulated. Because when we provide a calm, predictable space for kids, they are not going to be as dysregulated or it won't get as big a lot of the times. So I'm not saying it's a perfect answer all the time, but there's so much we can do to keep those kids in our space with us.
Yeah. And to your point, Charlie, a lot of teachers, that's their main goal is they want to make sure that the student remains with them. So that's wonderful that you're talking about the cohort model. And we'll dive into that more because we've mentioned it, I think, a couple of times here on the podcast. But I don't know if we've really done a deep dive as to what that even looks like for a campus or a school district and some of the things that we're doing with a lot of different educators all over the country. So let's go ahead and dive into the behind the banter first, and then we'll come back to the cohort model.
Sounds great.
All right, Charlie, you've been in education for a very long time. What is one phrase or saying that you always found yourself repeating with your students?
Firm but fair. Be firm but fair. I heard it my very first year, probably my first month of teaching from a teacher that I respected. And he said, be firm but fair. And I love it. It was so simple and it worked for me.
I had a quote on my board and I use it even with my own children. They probably get tired of me saying it, but it's actually Nelson Mandela's quote that says, I never lose. I either win or I learn. And so often our kids kind of had this mindset, if I made a mistake, then fill in the blank, like they would label themselves. And so I just wanted them to let them know that everyone makes a mistake, but it's about your mindset, right? And that growth mindset of, I never lose. I either am successful, which is the win, or I wasn't successful, but I'm learning how to be successful in the future. And so that was kind of my verbiage that I use with every kid about learning the correct behavior moving forward.
I love that. I'm going to add one more too. And that's breaking a rule a little bit, but I'm going to still do it. Okay.
You're allowed, so, Charlie.
Thank you. Please. I always used Wayne Gretzky's, he always said, you miss 100% of the shots you never take, or that you don't take. So you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, something like that. And I love it. I think it's so important. That's about trying, and it's about, you're going to fail. But if you don't try, you're definitely not going to get there. So I used to use that a lot.
I thought Michael Scott said that.
He probably borrowed it from Wayne Gretzky.
Do you remember the episode? It's got Wayne's Gretzky, and then he crossed out Wayne's name and put Michael Scott. Oh,
yes. Yes. I watched that all the time. Yes, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, I knew you watched the show. So. It's such a great show. All right, I digress. So let's go back to the cohort model, because I could easily talk about The Office for another hour. And we are working with school districts, Charlie, and I would love for you to just kind of break down what that model looks like.
Well, we have to have a framework to start. So we do have the 9 essential skills, and we have insights from the 3 tenets. And we have to teach those basic skills of self-awareness, self-regulation, self-reflection, and how to engage with other people, support their needs, but also share a space where we can solve problems collaboratively, even if we don't agree, sometimes when we don't even like each other. But we have to have a framework for that. What the cohort model does for us is it allows us to customize the approach. So we might start there, and we might think that we know where we're going, but what happens is we start off with a needs assessment, and they tell us what they actually need. The cohort group tells us. So it's usually district-wide, and they select people, and it's a small group of people, usually around 20 people, sometimes 15, or it's school-based. And so you just have to decide what is the most pressing need. And so we'll use the framework around there and start addressing these. It's usually behavior. It usually is the office referrals, or the kid is talking back, or the kids are dysregulated, or they're aggressive. So it's always about the behavior, but really it goes back to, how do I get equipped? And then how can I model this for other staff as a leader? Because teachers are also leaders. And how do I model this in front of parents and with students? So there's so much to it. And we do check-ins along the way to make sure that the learning is on target. Are we still meeting the goal? Or did that goal shift because you all keep seeing something different now? And so we get to customize the resources, or the conversation, or the case study analysis in that session. So there's also the virtual sessions I didn't mention. We do this usually for a whole year, a school year, with the staff. And we meet up, we do an orientation, and then we meet with them virtually every month after they've had time to practice the skill, so we can troubleshoot and then again customize our response. So what else would you add? Because I know that that's probably not even doing it justice.
No, I thought you did a great job. Well, I just was thinking through just the sessions that we do, and I love the opportunity for reflection, and how, Charlie, you do a great job of this too, of just getting them to drill down a little bit deeper and kind of seeing that aha moment for them to be like, oh, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. And, oh, I can have permission to make some changes. And we also talk about an action team, and how we can take these things that we're learning and not only implement it in our own space and environment, but also to share it out with others, and how important that is to change the culture, not only in your own space, but also building wide, or like you were talking about, district wide. You know, these are leaders that are doing things that are amazing and are going above and beyond. And we're selected for this cohort. And we know that the things that they're going to be learning is also going to have that ripple effect throughout their space, but then even beyond.
Yeah. It's that action team, that A team, that we're trying to help people in their district or their school to learn how to do this themselves, because that's where the real change is going to come. We can't wait externally for the change to come from, you know, the political climate, the social climate. Those things take way too long. And it doesn't create the kind of change that we need when we're in chaos, which is what we're in that in education right now, with mental health especially. And so, and behaviors, right? They just show up that way. So, and I also want to say too, we do the action team, but we also do new teacher cohorts. So the new teacher cohort is something where we onboard the new teachers to already come into your system with these skills.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that, because we can't assume that they're going to be equipped with the teacher program that they just came from. And so we want to make sure that they are prepared, because as we know, as a new teacher, student management, student discipline, fill in the blank as to the terminology that you want to use is always the most difficult thing for a teacher that's coming into the profession. And so to be able to have these tools right away, day one, and also having that support that sometimes they can't get from either a team teacher or administration because we're so busy with our own things that we're responsible for in our roles, that it's great to have that support coming in and letting them know that, you know, there's someone there to help them in need, especially as you're brand new.
Yeah, for sure.
So do you want to share any words of wisdom in regards to our topic today, and as far as the increase in referrals that folks might be seeing?
Yeah, just make sure that we validate the teacher experience because they are struggling. So I really want to make sure their needs are supported and we support them. They feel like they are not being heard or seen, and they feel like they're on an island a lot of the times, not always, but a lot. So start there, validate what their experience is and let them know there's hope. I'm going to equip you and I'm going to support you through this. That should be the conversation to start, or at least I would encourage that.
For sure. And I know a lot of folks are starting this year, they're starting to see things and they're wondering like, what is my starting point? Where do I even begin? And so Charlie, you did a wonderful job with several administrators lately of just letting them know like, hey, you can just start with the bulk order. You can start with a free study kit. So if that's kind of the starting point for them, where can they find that information?
Yeah, they can just go to thrivingeducator.org/book. You can get the book from there. You can get a bulk order there. You'll get a discount. Mm-hmm. If you do that, they'll get the free book study kit right there. So you'll see it. It's real simple. So I would start there because that starts the conversation and it gets other people interested. And so you'll know right away who's a part of that action team or who's a good candidate.
Yeah. And that's the thing, right? Is just to get the conversation started. I mean, as far as changing mindsets, you can't change this mindset without having a conversation. So I think this is a great starting point for folks to at least consider a few things that they might be doing differently than what we're suggesting, and start to look at their environment, start looking at some proactive tools, or even if they start to see a behavior, maybe an alternative way of handling that. And so we would definitely recommend the Language of Behavior book, using that for a book study on the campus. So with that, you can definitely reach out to Charlie through her website, thrivingeducator.org. Mine is joshdamber.com. We're here to support you in any way. And if you have any questions for this podcast for future episodes, you can hit us up at bit.ly/LOB questions. It's a short form just asking what's going on in your world, so that way we can support you in any way possible. With that, Charlie, I hope you have a fantastic week and we'll see you again next Tuesday.
You too, Josh.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow. And the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. We'll see you on the next episode.